I'm Duncan MacLeod, and this is TCS Plus, the business technology show from Tech Central, which is brought to you today by a company called Network Platforms. And I'm really looking forward to this conversation. For one thing, I understand that Network Platforms is second only to Telkom in South Africa in terms of the number of peering adjacencies. And don't worry, we'll explain all of what that means in just a moment. But first of all, let me introduce you to my guest in the studio today. Warwick Ward-Cox is Chief Technical Officer at Network Platforms. Warwick, welcome. Welcome to Tech Central. Thanks for making the time.
Thank you very much. Nice to be here.
You've been involved in the internet industry for about 3 decades now, which takes you all the way back to the early days of the internet in South Africa. Warwick, tell me a little bit about your career history.
Sure. Well, pre my career, I started a bulletin board when I was in school.
Oh, wow.
High school. Good old analog, 300 board and 1,200 board BBSs.
Was this in the late 80s?
Late 80s, 87, 88, 89.
It was the days of Beltel.
Correct, correct. And then when I went to varsity and I came back from varsity, it was then the start of the internet as such. And I converted the bulletin board to a SLIP and PPP bulletin board, so people dialed in with those protocols. And then in 1996, I started one of the first internet companies in South Africa as a partner for Pix Internet in Cape Town.
I remember the name.
And we ran that for a while and eventually sold that to one of the other ISPs.
Who bought them in the end?
MWeb.
MWeb, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember
when MWeb went on that acquisition trail and they revolutionized the uncapped market shortly after that.
Yes.
And then after that, I was still in IT industry working for conglomerates, blue chip companies. Mm-hmm. And but my love and passion has always been internet based. And I moved to Network Platforms recently. Well, recently is 12, 13 years ago now. Okay. But pre that, I was in a couple of other ISPs. And we've gone from strength to strength. It's been a brilliant ride in the internet industry.
Yeah. So always on the technical side of things?
Very much so. Mm-hmm. Network architecture design, that's my forte.
Okay. Yeah. So you know your way around a Linux command line.
I do. I do indeed. Been running Linux since 1992.
Oh, wow. 92.
If anybody remembers, there was a distribution called Slackware.
Remember the name?
No longer is really distributed.
Yeah.
Came on floppy disks. We had to download them from Stellenbosch University at the time. 40 floppy disks to download.
40?
Yeah. And then you'd get to like floppy 35 of your install and have an error on it.
Bad sector.
Exactly. It was interesting days then.
Wow. And what Linux do you run today?
Mainly Ubuntu.
Ubuntu, okay.
And recently Rocky Linux.
Which one?
Rocky.
Oh, I don't know that one.
Okay. It's an offshoot of the old CentOS.
Okay.
So it's still Red Hat Enterprise derived source code.
Okay. Great. You haven't been tempted to do what many Linux users have done and move to Mac?
No. Not at all.
Not at all. Okay. I think the hardcore techies have stayed on Linux.
Yeah, yeah. I enjoy Linux. It's still my forte. I love it.
Okay. Great. Well, tell me a bit about Network Platforms. You've been with them for about 12, 13 years now, but the company, I think, has been around for about 2 decades.
Correct. Bradley Love started the company in around 2003. So we're 21 years old, odd. It started off originally as a kind of like a managed service provider, you'd define it, really looking after people's PCs, desktops, companies, networks, servers, that sort of thing. And then from around 2008, he started going into the internet side and started up a white label platform for ADSL resellers to get entry into the ADSL space. And then from 2012, we really started and focused on the data center drive. And when I joined, we moved into Teraco, the first one into Teraco Johannesburg, shortly after Teraco Cape Town and then Teraco Durban. Mm-hmm. And we've gone from strength to strength. If you have a look at how Teracos have changed the internet space, it's phenomenal. It really is.
Yeah.
And we've changed the company over the years, so we went from an MSP to with internet section. Then we moved into, at the time as well, Network Platforms was distributing some hardware products, Draytec firewalls and Draytec routers and switches, okay, as well as CyberRoam firewalls. And we dropped that more recently, around 2016, we dropped hardware distribution. Mm-hmm. And we've really been focusing on managed service providers, wholesale space in the internet.
Okay.
We don't deal with end users anymore. We deal with the MSPs, okay, and the wholesale space, okay, now.
So take us through the range of services you provide to that market. You do IP transit, first of all. What is IP transit?
The IP transit's really the backbone of the internet. So if a company comes to you and they're wanting internet connectivity, there's two flavors of internet connectivity. If they're an ISP or a large corporate company who have their own resources allocated to them, then they would take IP transit. Mm-hmm. IP transit, as I say, is the backbone. It's where we all BGP peer with everybody else on the internet. So that's the core of the internet is IP transit and BGP peering. And if you're a smaller company, you just want internet access, you would take what they call dedicated internet access, DIA, mm-hmm, where you're using our resources as an ISP. So that's really the two fundamentals. The core of the business is really around IP transit. We have our own resources. We've got our own international backbone, local backbone, obviously, in South Africa. We also sell direct internet access to clients of MSPs who require that service. And we then go as well into national long distance, mm-hmm, between all the data centers, as well as international long distance. So we can bring up circuits for generally those circuits would be used by IP transit ISPs, mm-hmm, where they want to connect their backbone using a national long distance or an international long distance between the data centers. So they might have a presence already in one data center and they want to get a presence in another data center and extend themselves between the two.
Okay.
We call that a national long distance or an international long distance service. We then also sell virtualization. We've got a large virtualization deployment in Johannesburg and Cape Town.
Is it virtualized servers?
Virtualization. So virtualized servers. We provide the backbone for that. We've got all the servers and the hardware and the technology and the storage and the backups. And the MSPs resell off that. Or the ISPs even take services from us. And we present that to the ISP as a layer two service, which means the ISP, he sees it as part of his network. It's not our network.
Right.
It's part of his network. It's on his network. It's got his resources on it.
Kind of white-labeled solution.
Kind of like a white-labeled. Clients wouldn't even know that it was ours.
Okay.
They'd see it as their solution.
Okay.
Or the ISP solution, whoever that is. Then we also sell cloud services ourselves in the sense that to the MSP market, we sell voice services. We've got a large voice deployment. And we also sell hosting of various flavors for the MSP use.
Okay. Okay. So you're a wholesaler only. You don't provide any services to end users.
We don't have end users on our books.
And that's deliberate because you don't want to be seen to be competing with your clients.
Correct.
Okay.
We do not want to compete with our clients.
Okay.
If an end user had to call us and we could identify who it was, we would redirect them back to their MSP or their, mm-hmm, ISP. We wouldn't want to steal a client. We don't do that. Mm-hmm.
So I imagine in the position that you're in that you are probably the first guys who become aware when there's a problem, like an undersea cable getting severed, for example. You'll see the issue immediately and then be,
correct,
able to inform your clients. Am I right in thinking that? You really have your finger on the pulse of what's happening in the network infrastructure space.
Correct. Yeah. We've got visibility on the majority of the major cables. So like Equano, WAX, SAFE, EASY, Seacom, we can see them. And we utilize them for our offerings between, yeah, all the data centers. So between our POP in London and our POP in Cape Town, we've got Equano and WAX. Mm-hmm. We know instantaneously if there's a problem on that. Often we can see that something might be about to materialize because we start getting alarms on the cable.
Right.
And then suddenly you'll just have to drop out.
Yeah.
Anchor's now taken it.
Okay.
Which is the common one.
Yeah.
The common one.
Yeah. Or a mudslide.
Yeah. On the west coast. Yeah.
So you buy capacity on the undersea cables and resell that to internet service providers? Is that typically how it would work? Would an ISP typically go through a company like yours, like Network Platforms, correct, to get that sort of access? They wouldn't engage directly with a Google, for example, to get access to Equiano.
No. Yeah. So generally, if an ISP came to us for services, we'd sell them IP transit. Mm-hmm. So we would provide them a feed in any of the data centers they want to be in, whether it's London or Cape Town, Johannesburg, Durban. And they would pick it up, and then they would utilize that where they want. Mm-hmm. We allow ISPs also to take a single service and connect it multiple POPs under a single service with us,
okay,
which is quite a nice offering for the clients.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Now, the telecommunications market in South Africa has changed quite fundamentally over the last decade or so. Teraco has obviously had a big impact. Other data center operators that have built infrastructure, we've seen a proliferation of undersea cables in that period. And also a lot of infrastructure investments in national long-distance fiber. Maybe just take us through how, I mean, you've been at the coalface of this for a long time. Just take us through some of the changes that you've seen and what the impact has been on the market.
I think let's go back right to the beginning.
Sure.
So when the internet started really in South Africa, you could only purchase internet capacity from Telkom. That was your only option. They had a mandate from government at the time to provide internet, and that was it. Everybody had to buy through Telkom. You couldn't actually have another ISP and buy from an ISP. In pretty much around 1996, that changed radically, mm-hmm, in the sense that Telkom were taken to task and other ISPs then came on the market and competed directly against Telkom. Mm-hmm. And Telkom lost their monopoly in the sense that international circuits could be procured on the wholesale level, not directly from Telkom as such. And then if we move on from that, but it was still very expensive. Yeah. And if we move on from that, things changed really from 2012, where suddenly Teraco was a main data center option. And all the ISPs could move into Teraco, get space in Teraco, and suddly peer on the Teraco exchange that they had in the building, which was the NAP Africa exchange. Previously to that, there was, and there's still the oldest exchanges in Africa are the Jinx exchange in Johannesburg and Sing Sing Cape Town. And they've been always operational, but the problem was with getting to those exchanges. Mm. Where suddenly now an exchange point where ISPs can peer openly and freely is in the same building that they are. Mm. Change things completely. Suddenly, instead of requiring X amount of bandwidth, you now need it 50% of that bandwidth because you're peering that traffic around each other. Then WAX came on the scene, the undersea cable on the West Coast. And after WAX came, we saw suddenly IP transit pricing on the international stage dropping radically. We went from just sub 2,000 rand a megabit per second in early 2012 to where we are now. We're selling at a tenth of that, not even a tenth, 1% of that price almost. It's changed radically.
So the market was artificially kept expensive and competition has driven it.
Suddenly there was capacity available in South Africa. WAX came on the scene. Easy came on the scene. Seacom came on the scene. We've now got Equiano. We've got the 2 Africa cable, which is now coming. We've now got lots of options, which means
Ace
there's lots
as well, which comes
Ace,
out of Cape
yes.
Town.
Yeah. Even the SACS cable on the West Coast to South America, it's all changed connectivity and it's driven pricing down for all these ISPs in the whole. It's an interesting market to be.
I was interested in Google's announcement a couple of months ago that they're going to build a new subsea cable between the KZN coast, I think it is. It could be PE. It's not quite clear. Certainly the east coast of South Africa and Perth in Australia, the so-called Umuja cable. Is there really demand along that route? Why do you think Google's doing it?
Look, between South Africa and Australia, there's a big expat community which wants to talk and share things. Australia's pretty much been an isolated area. The only way you could get to Australia for us was through Malaysia.
Yes.
And it's a long route. Right now for us,
on an old cable system.
On a very old cable system. To get there, we could take the safe cable effectively into Singapore.
Yeah.
It's extended from Malaysia to Singapore, and then we go from Singapore back down to Australia. that route for us is currently sitting at best about 300, 320 milliseconds, which is not ideal, especially if you're wanting to do a voice conversation, a live real-time communications. You need to be really about 170 to 200 milliseconds at worst. So this cable from East Coast Africa to Australia will definitely make that open up that market, make things a lot easier. There's quite a bit of corporates also that have extended from South Africa into Australia, mining companies, vice versa, who would like to have better financial institutions, better latencies for their transactions, especially in the financial industry. That can lower latency, it equates to money.
Yeah. And it's not only been South Africa that's benefited from all of this. Yeah. So the whole continent of Africa has seen huge investments in fiber infrastructure, companies like Liquid and others that have deployed national or intercontinental cross-country fiber. And that must have had a big impact as well. What have you seen from a network perspective in terms of connectivity across the continent?
Africa has opened up, especially over the last 5 years. Mm-hmm. It's really opened up. We've got lots of layer two in the ground, dug, sunk between all the countries. Majority of all the countries are now connected between each other with fiber options. There's even microwave options as backup solutions and satellite options available now. But it has opened up completely.
Yeah,
we're seeing a huge amount of transactions now between Ghana, Nigeria, South Africa. It's amazing.
Yeah. And the data center, I mean, there's been huge investments in data centers in South Africa. Are we seeing that replicated elsewhere on the continent, or is South Africa really the home for data centers on the continent?
It's still very much a majority of the data centers are in South Africa, but it's opening up. There's some big data centers that are going up into the center of Africa now that are opening up shortly.
Right. Okay. All right, let's talk about, let's come back to the South African market and talk about the infrastructure here. Obviously, there's been a big impact from the undersea cables, but we've also seen huge investments in so-called NLD networks, national long distance networks, and you buy capacity on those networks as well. And I know we were chatting beforehand, you mentioned that the Cape Town-Joburg route has been pretty stable, but there have been issues in providing connectivity between Gauteng and the KZN coast. Maybe just take us through what the issues are there.
Yeah, so give you an example. Cape Town to Johannesburg, we run on multiple cables. We got, for that route, we've got three different fiber providers. So we've got redundancy in the sense that if one fiber provider goes down, we're unaffected. Between Johannesburg and Durban, we've got five.
Five cables.
Five different fiber providers.
So in theory, that should be fine.
At any moment in time, there's always one cable down and potentially two down between Johannesburg and Durban. The problem at the moment is the N3 route. It's a very popular route. It's the most direct route between Johannesburg and Durban, but it's also constantly under maintenance.
So the fiber runs right alongside the highway?
It runs in that pavement section on the side of the highway on either side. And often when a fiber passes or goes under a bridge, there'll be a shared duct where all the fiber providers come and conglomerate at that duct and go under that section of the bridge and then come out and split up to their own trunks again. Mm-hmm. But it's a problem because there's common points where fiber providers are. The N3 route SANRAL is repairing constantly and doing maintenance on. I think for the last 5 years, I don't recall any time where it hasn't had any maintenance happening on it.
I haven't been down that route lately, but I remember there's always construction.
There's always construction. And there's always a case where a TLB picks up a fiber or multiple fibers and destroys them, and then we're down for 5-6 hours while they repair it. Mm-hmm. So we've taken multiple paths. We have a route east of the N3, we've got a route west of the N3, and we've got another two routes on the N3, and then a route that's on the small towns, pretty much on the east of the N3, going through all small towns.
Oh, through Mpumalanga and Northern KZN, that's
correct.
Route.
Okay. Correct. Yeah.
Down towards Mthunzini.
Mthunzini, correct. Okay. So it gives us options, basically, to ensure that we've got connectivity for the customers in Durban area.
Okay. So there's new undersea cables coming as well, Warwick. I think the 2 Africa cable is said to be the first high-capacity cable between Durban and Cape Town. Do you think those investments in wet cable could have a positive impact on network provision in South Africa and perhaps alleviate some of the issues you've seen in the KZN region?
It definitely will improve things. Currently, at the moment, there is a land cable from Durban to Cape Town following the coast. However, it's problematic. It has a very low uptime rate. Okay. So having a wet cable from Cape Town through to Durban is going to change things.
Okay.
That cable is actually live, the 2 Africa segment, and we are able to sell services on it already.
Okay. Good. And you mentioned the terrestrial cable that runs between Durban and Cape Town and being down a lot. What's the reason for that? Is it also just maintenance?
Maintenance on the highways, breakages, general problems, but it's a high problem area at the moment, especially the area between KZN and the Eastern Cape.
The old Transkei.
Transkei. The topography is very bad for it. That's what comes down to it.
Okay. Now, I mentioned at the beginning of this show that you're second only to Telkom in terms of the number of peering adjacencies. What does that mean and why is it significant?
It has a direct relationship to how many peers that we have on our network. So we've got an open and free settlement-free peering policy. We will peer with anybody at any location where we're mutually at. We don't require payments. We don't require commercial applications. Simple email to our peering address, and we'll establish a peering relationship. And peering relationship improves connectivity for clients. Mm-hmm. An example, you surfing a TikTok video tonight, and suddenly something's gone wrong with it. You can log it with one of our MSPs or ISPs. They can log it with us. We've actually now, because we have a peering relationship with TikTok, we can actually engage with TikTok directly and say, we're seeing this problem. If we don't have that relationship, we've got to rely on our IP transit upstreams to do that, which becomes problematic because now we're relying on an outside party where, in ideal scenario, we've got a direct relationship with a peering team on the other side. And it benefits clients immensely. So the peering adjacencies report that you're referring to is a very nice indication of how ISPs are connected worldwide and gives you an idea of how much capacity and connectivity they've got.
Okay. So what's the outlook for peering in South Africa? I mean, the market seems to have improved dramatically since NAP Africa was launched in the Teraco data centers. Is there a need for more peering? Should there be more peering points in South Africa? How do you see the market developing in the next few years?
I think peering will always have its space. Peering is the backbone on the internet. And I think there's always room for more peering. I would like to peer with more peers at more data centers. Mm-hmm. I would like to get more of our customers at more data centers so that they can peer themselves at those exchanges. And it benefits their customers indirectly. Mm-hmm. We're seeing only at this stage, pretty much in South Africa, there's only a handful of old incumbent internet service providers that do not have an open peering policy that still require you to pay to see their networks. But 99% of other networks in South Africa, we're on peering exchanges and we can see each other.
I'm amazed there are companies that aren't peering in that way.
We are as well.
You must work with a lot of the big content providers as well. You know, the Netflixes and Amazon Primes of the world. You mentioned TikTok. Because I imagine that a big chunk, certainly in the evenings, of the traffic flow we see across the internet in South Africa is related to people watching television.
It's amazing to see. If we look at our traffic patterns through the day, 6 a.m. in the morning, the network starts going up because people are now getting online, starting to see things. We actually see the Netflix traffic increase at 6 a.m. to 7 a.m., which is very interesting.
Netflix, the kids in front of the TV to watch some cartoons while we're getting ready for work. Yeah.
In non-school holidays, Netflix is really idle. Your Prime Video is idle during the day.
Yeah.
But come 4 o'clock in the afternoon, 4:30, it starts increasing. Mm-hmm. And it goes all the way up to 10 o'clock at night. And we see its peak around 8 to 9 p.m. It peaks on the network.
Okay.
Netflix is by far the largest of the streaming networks. Mm-hmm. And we see similar patterns from Prime Video, Showmax, mm-hmm. YouTube is very large on a traffic, on a content basis.
Yeah. And all of these content providers, I presume, peer in the local market.
Yeah, they all peer in the local market.
They're it would all, be prohibitively expensive not to, right?
Some of them even go so far as to give ISPs caching servers. For example, Google's got a big drive to do that. They'll actually place content delivery servers on your network, so it's closer to your clients for you. Mm. It improves them. It removes their requirement on their links to be immense on their networks in South Africa, shifts it onto your network, which is fine because it improves your customer's experience.
So you must have seen big changes over the last 10 years in the type of content that's flowing over the internet in South Africa, with the rise of IPTV and the evenings in particular.
Absolutely.
What is the peak? When is the peak traffic on the network? Is it sometime during the day, or does it happen in the evenings?
Absolutely. For business use, we see a peak between 7:30 and 9:30 in the mornings. There's a peak on for business usage, and then another peak after lunchtime, and then light just before closing time, 4 to 5 p.m. There's just another peak where
people
everybody's wrapping up.
Exactly. We always do some work now.
Yeah, we always joke about it. And then the home residential market we see takes over literally from 4 p.m. They start picking up, and the network switches over to a residential type where it's more Netflix streaming type traffic. Yeah, where during the day we see it's more business applications.
Yeah. I'm sure the ISPs like the fact that the network is kept busy throughout the day.
We love it. The network's balanced throughout the time. Yeah. 24 hours a day, we're balanced.
Even at 2 in the morning, there's traffic.
It's amazing. We try and do our maintenance at 3 a.m., 4 a.m. in the morning, the least impact on the network. And even though you push out notices, we still get the clients that complain that their Netflix just went down for 5 minutes. It's amazing. It's amazing, yeah.
Amazing stuff. Okay. Great. Well, Warwick, lastly, maybe just give us an overview of why managed service providers and ISPs should choose network platforms for IP peering. What is it you do better than everyone else in the market?
I think we really pride ourselves from giving custom solutions. What I say by that is we don't have a cookie cutter design. We don't have a product list where clients have to adhere to. You know, take a gigabit per second because that's all we offer. No, we don't do that. Mm-hmm. We allow MSPs and ISPs to start small, to grow. We don't penalize them for that. We've got a straightforward pricing model, mm-hmm. and we share that with the customers. When we get a benefit on pricing, we pass it on to all our customers. We're happy to engage with our clients to get their solution that they require and build it for them. Mm-hmm. And we don't penalize them for that solution. That works very well for our clients.
Anyone who wants to learn more about network platforms, the address is networkplatforms.co.za, is that right?
Correct, networkplatforms.co.za. And we're also on Facebook, LinkedIn, and the X.
Well, it's been a fascinating conversation, Warwick. Warwick Ward-Cox is Chief Technical Officer at Network Platforms. Thank you so much for sharing your insights with Tech Central today. Much appreciated.
Thank you very much. Thanks for your time. Appreciate it.